Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Drive the highway down the moon, past the billboard where you see me,
see me,
see me,
see me.
Ask the people for the king.
Greetings, Cine Coven. I'm one of your silver nitrate witches, Laura Valenza, and for your listening pleasure today, I have a little sleeping draft from the witches ostracized by the Puritans, particularly Hester Prynne of The Scarlet Letter. We're not actually here to talk about any of the Scarlet Letter adaptations, but rather the 2010 teen rom-com Easy A, directed by Will Gluck and written by Burt Royal. Easy A was rated PG-13, runs about an hour and a half, and has an all-star cast in spite of its paltry $8 million budget. A massive hit, the film earned $75 million at the box office. Since this is a mini episode, we're going to focus on four articles from major national publications. So those are going to be Being Naughty to Be Nice as the Rumor Mill Awaits, which might be the worst, longest headline ever, by Stephen Holden, written on September 16th, 2010 for the New York Times. Then we have Easy A Film Review, the least creative headline ever, by Kirk Honeycutt, writing for The Hollywood Reporter on October 14th, 2010, followed by Easy A, likely to top a quartet of low-budget films opening this weekend. That's just a sentence, guys. And that was written by Ben Fritz of the Los Angeles Times on September 17th, 2010. And finally, the scathing Easy A teen sex comedy minus the sex by Sadie Doyle, writing for The Atlantic on September 20th, 2010. So Easy A is set in Ojai, California. And no one actually ever says that in the movie, but the town name is on signs and in school and business names, like, everywhere. I always wondered if there was something special about Ojai, aside from it clearly being affluent and gorgeous, that made it so special for the setting, because they clearly want you to know that is where we are in the movie. And Honeycutt in The Hollywood Reporter actually has a theory and explains. So Honeycutt writes, "The story takes place in Southern California's Ojai Valley, the film's first stroke of brilliance, as this lovely oasis of natural beauty with a spirited arts colony has scarcely appeared in movies since it was used to represent Shangri-La in Frank Capra's, Frank Capra did It's a Wonderful Life, for those of you not familiar. In Frank Capra's 1939, The Lost Horizon, the conflicting interplay of liberal sensibilities and small-town small-mindedness underscores the themes in Burt Royle's playful script. So, our heroine is 17-year-old Olive Pendergast, the confident, clever, studious girl itching for a bit of a bad reputation, and played by Emma Stone. Critics and audiences adore the charming Stone, and like, how could you not? She's amazing. The New York Times saluted, quote, the irresistible presence of Emma Stone in their review, and The Hollywood Reporter admired her, quote, self-assurance and old-fashioned brio. Unfortunately, The Atlantic could not even bother to bask a little in Stone's charisma, given how concerned they were with Olive's role as, quote, one of those unbearable 17-year-old high school students who speak and think like 35-year-old screenwriters. Since I was one of those unbearable 17-year-old high school students when this movie came out, I just have to say that Olive spoke the way that I wished I could speak at that age. So, you know, whatever, Sadie Doyle. Anyway, Olive spends a hilarious weekend montage learning to love Natasha Bedingfield's A Pocket Full of Sunshine, which was probably one of the more annoying and yet also annoyingly catchy pop songs of the year. And so, out of embarrassment, get out of plans with her friend, she lies to best friend Rhiannon, played by Ally McCalka, that she spent the weekend with a college boy. The New York Times wrote Rhiannon off as, quote, the toxic best friend, which, although Rhi is pretty annoying at moments, she's only annoying in kind of an endearing, confused teen sort of way. And since Olive is, like, pretty much immune to her jibes, I feel like calling her toxic is a little harsh. Anyway, Olive's evangelical nemesis, Marianne Bryant, played by Amanda Bynes, who I think I actually like best when she's playing the bad guy, overhears the two girls talking, and she gets the school rumor mill going that Olive is having sex. So our introduction to Marianne in this scene is kind of fabulous. We see her emerge from a bathroom stall through the reflection of the mirror before we actually see her. It's almost as if to say she's the one who will hold a social mirror up to Olive throughout this, like, movie. And then seeing her and her reflection at the same time is like the embodiment of the double standards that Olive is going to face in this movie. And if you heard a meow in the background, that is because Fern is here and she says hello. Once the gossip has spread, Brandon, played by Dan Bird, who is also in teen rom-com A Cinderella Story, solicits Olive's help in making their peers believe he's straight so he can avoid getting bullied, which leads to one of the funniest fake sex scenes ever, made all the stronger by the sting of this kid who feels like he isn't safe being himself, and the burn of his celebrated reception by the boys after losing his virginity, juxtaposed with the judgmental glares Olive receives. Once that happens, the can of phallic worms is open. So many boys come to Olive. And while it's mostly funny, we also get glimpses of the pain of those facing fat shaming or being dismissed as nerds or even experiencing racism. Of course, it all goes too far when one guy thinks Olive is actually letting boys pay her for actual sex. And then it turns out, on top of that the guidance counselor, played by Lisa Kudrow, aka Phoebe from Friends, gave a student chlamydia, which she tries to justify by pointing out that he's been held back and is actually an adult. And she's also fine with him telling everyone Olive gave him the STD. And then to make it even worse, the counselor is married to Olive's favorite teacher, played by Thomas Hayden Church, who you might know from the movie Sideways. He's the teacher who introduced Olive to the Scarlet Letter, where she got the idea to sew red A's for adulterer onto her wardrobe of super sexy bustiers. Luckily for Olive, and for the teen girls who adored this flick, she has the coolest parents ever, played by Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson. When they meet Brandon, they let Olive know that they are totally cool with the, quote, sexual orientation of her opposite sex partner, end quote. The New York Times felt the hippie parents were part of the, quote, awkward curves of the subplot. But I think letting Tucci and Clarkson just be weird in the background is part of what makes Easy A so memorable 15 years later. In addition to her fun and trusting parents, Olive has the adoration of Woodchuck Todd, played by the gorgeous Penn Badgley, known for Gossip Girl and John Tucker Must Die, but you might also recognize him from more recent work with the television show You. I also have to mention that Fred Armisen makes a weird little cameo in this movie, and I can't decide if it's funnier that he's Amanda Bynes' dad or that he's an evangelical pastor. I don't know. You tell me. So when this movie came out, I too was 17 and I loved it so much. I saw it 3 times in movie theaters. I think it was the first time I ever saw a movie more than once in the theaters. I guess, as the LA Times writes, I was one of the teenage girls who were, quote, likely to drive the top movie that weekend at the box office. And I hope we succeeded. Given Easy A's concerns with gender double standards, it's a little funny that the LA Times' entire box office prediction article is all about whether men or women are going to be the bigger audiences for the movies coming out that weekend, and who will spend more at the cinema. I also have to point out that as exaggerated as this movie seems, it does really capture the year 2010 really well. It's actually kind of weird watching this movie in 2025, having survived one Trump presidency and in the midst of a second. And I don't know. I feel like we could go down a whole rabbit hole of analyzing like conservative versus progressive culture as it appears in this movie, and if like anybody could even get away with making this movie in 2025. But on a less deeper note, there's a great line about social media in the movie where the English teacher complains about rumors and posting every thought on the internet and gives the example of Roman announcing to social media that he's getting a Coke Zero. And I thought that was like really funny because there actually was a moment in high school when I was sitting at my desk in my bedroom, which was facing a window, and I had my computer open and I had Facebook open, and I saw somebody post on Facebook that they were heading to the deli to get sodas with so-and-so. And as I read that, I glanced up and looked out the window and saw the two of them walking down the street heading towards the deli to get their sodas. And I was like, this is a really weird world we're living in. Anyway, this is the rare teen movie that actually decided to engage with how the progressive conservative divide can affect kids too. As Honeycutt wrote in The Hollywood Reporter, quote, Easy A is a high school comedy that turns a stale genre upside down with sly wit and sharp satire. And I completely agree. And I think part of the key to that is it's one of the rare movies that for teenagers that actually addresses political divides in the United States. I mean, that's kind of the whole premise of the movie, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more later, but I think critics got real focused on the idea of losing your virginity and all of that sort of drama that's happening in this movie. But I actually think the movie is less concerned about sexual activity and virginity than it is with what those things symbolize for progressives and conservatives in the United States. So keep that in mind. I will say though, you know, following up on what Honeycutt wrote in The Hollywood Reporter, I don't really think there have been any high school comedies to follow in Easy A's footsteps since. If I'm forgetting something, I don't know. Comment about it. Tell me. The Hollywood Reporter put Easy A in good company with the movie Juno, and the New York Times compared Stone's performance to Alicia Silverstone's iconic lead in Clueless. But Sadie Doyle over in The Atlantic rebuked the movie for missing its John Hughes 80s aspirations. Of course, she seems to think the big difference between Hughes's movies and Easy A is that his movies captured how, quote, real live adolescents spoke and thought and felt. Yeah, I always thought 16 Candles, Say Anything, and The Breakfast Club were fine examples of brutal realism. Okay, moving on, Sadie. Holden over at the New York Times had some similar issues, believing that high school students are crueler in real life because apparently homophobia, fat shaming, slut shaming, peer pressure, and more aren't cruel enough for a teen rom-com. And that he also thought real life high school students are more sexually active because, I don't know, we can just stereotype the sex life of every single teenager in the country. Sure. Okay. This is going back to the Atlantic with Sadie Doyle. She is trying to say again that the John Hughes movies were better than Easy A. And she says one of the ways they did this was to acknowledge that their characters had sex, which is something that neither Olive nor anyone else in this movie ever manages to accomplish, end quote. It feels again like we're not really understanding the genre within which this movie is functioning. I mean, that's fine if that's what the Breakfast Club wanted to do, but I think Easy A is also fulfilling the goals of its genre well, too. And again, I think we're also like, or just making like a generalization about, you know, teenagers' sex lives when the whole point of this movie is that, you know what, at the end of the day, it's nobody's business. But hey, you know what? At least Holden says that the representation of technology and social media is updated and accurate in this film. So there's that. Thank the higher power. And by that, I do mean Tom Cruise. Belle and I have seen a lot of this type of criticism with other teen rom-coms that try to tackle more serious issues but still stay within that kid-friendly realm and that light comedic romantic realm too. And I've seen this happen with another movie too, where the critics just didn't know what to do with that movie that tries to be a little bit edgier while still fitting within the parameters of, you know, kid-friendly, teens, rom-com, all of that kind of thing. It's almost like the critics start wanting these movies to be more serious or more maturely satirical in a way that totally ignores who the audience is here or what the actual genre is here. And that's 17-year-olds who I bet there's a good chance also have to bring their younger siblings with them to the movie theater. The other issue that critics tend to have with teen rom-coms is that the comedy turns to romance and drama in the final act. But I gotta say, whenever somebody advertises something as a teen rom-com, that's kind of what I expect to happen. Like, if I wanted it to all be one big SNL gag, I'd go see Austin Powers, but like, I wanted to actually get a little bit like more serious at some point. The most important critique that I'm seeing in this debate between critics is whether or not the movie was fundamentally and safely puritanical, as the New York Times phrased it. The harshest critique along this line, though, definitely came from Doyle over in The Atlantic, and I'm just going to go through a few of the points she made in her article. So she starts off by saying, quote, Easy A, which opened this weekend, is a movie with many goals. At various points, it tries to be a satire of contemporary sexual mores, a feminist critique of double standards, and an homage to the great teen sex comedies of the 80s. It fails at all of these things, not because its reach exceeds its grasp, but because it's not reaching for much in the first place. End quote. I gotta be honest, I kind of agree with Doyle. I don't think the movie is reaching for much in the first place, but that's actually exactly why I do think it's great, because honestly, it's just fun and it's entertaining. And 15 years later, after having seen this movie 3 times in the movie theater, it still cracks me up. And I think you got to give a movie credit for that. And I think the other thing that's kind of interesting about it is, like, while puritanical, I bristle at a little bit. It feels a little harsh. I think the word safe that appeared in the New York Times earlier is actually a really key part of this movie. The stakes ultimately feel pretty safe here. You know, Olive has a really nice life. She has really supportive parents. She lives in a really beautiful home. Like, you know that nothing that happens here is really going to be that bad. And I think that's part of the charm of the teen rom-com, is that it brings you into this world where even if it touches on some pretty serious subject matter, you kind of feel like everything's going to be okay. And I think that sometimes we need those movies, especially right now, when everything does not feel okay. All right, so moving on. Doyle also says, so she claims that, quote, what Easy A needs, what stories about girls and sex and shame need generally, is a story not about a good girl facing unjust punishment, but about a girl who had sex and who faces consequences, some good, some bad, and none of them the end of the world. It's a statement that I think the word generally might actually be the most important part of that statement, because generally, I completely agree with Doyle that we do totally need more of those stories in the world. I also, though, think she's asking Easy A to be a completely different movie than it is, and I don't think that that's a totally fair way to criticize it. The last thing Doyle does, and this is one of my favorite critic moves, it's when the critic goes, "Let me try to rewrite the script because I bet I could do it better." So here's how Doyle would have written this movie. She says, quote, "There's a promising story in here somewhere, a happily raunchy and amoral tale about a girl cashing in on her sexuality." I hope she saw Yorgos Lanthimos's, what was the movie called with Emma Stone, where she was like the baby in a grown-up's body. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, she continues, "Or a grim story about the psychological damage of slut-shaming." That's a different movie. "Or a resounding rejection of the idea that virginity is every girl's most prized possession." I don't think that's a moral of this movie at all. "Or a satire of male sexual bravado." I would say this is satire of male sexual bravado, but okay. "What we end up with instead is a mess, a story that tries to go in all of these directions, commits to none of them, and finally just plays it safe." Again, that word safe appears, and I think the sense of safety is actually important in these types of movies, and I think they play an important role in our lives. I'm all for the movies that go after, you know, yeah, the psychological damage of slut-shaming. That story has to be told. Happily raunchy and amoral tales, gotta love those. You know, I mean, all of this, I think, is totally great, but it's not the role that Easy A plays, and I think that's okay. And the other thing that I think is really important to remember with the movie Easy A is it's very, very, very carefully told from Olive's perspective. I mean, the entire thing is framed as her webcast, where she's telling her story almost as if she's reading from her diary. So the other thing, too, is that it's like, at the end of the day, Olive is kind of a safe girl. She actually doesn't want a lot of drama. She's not sure if she wants to have sex or not. And at the end of the day, she feels it's not anybody's business, and she doesn't need people to know what her decision is. So I think the plot of the movie actually does a really good job of reflecting its specific protagonist and the choices that she makes for herself that are not actually intended to be a judgment on anybody else's choices at all. Those are some of the thoughts from critics on this movie and some of my thoughts about this movie. I want to fast forward a little bit. In more recent news, Stone is going to be in the upcoming Yorgos Lanthimos film. I'm glad she's taking her acting craft seriously and continuing to make strange, artsy movies, though I really actually wish she would branch out from Lanthimos. He's not my favorite. Also, in 2019, Variety published an article claiming a spin-off of Easy A was in the works, with the original screenwriter Burt Royal tasked with both writing and directing the movie this time. I'm guessing the pandemic put a halt to that, but as against sequels and remakes as I am, I kind of hope it does become a thing someday. I like that they decided to keep the screenwriter and even give him the chance to direct. Like, I do think it's a really well-written movie. It's definitely one of the wittiest, funniest movies I've ever seen. So, you know, I think that screenwriter is probably really key to pulling off a spinoff. The other thing that I want to say on a more serious note is I think it's also important to put this movie in a little bit of the political context of the era. You know, Easy A appeared on the scene along with the slut walk protests when women hit the streets protesting rape and sexual harassment and taking ownership of the word slut. And I'm curious how a spinoff Easy A would fit into a, I hate to say post, but I kind of think post Me Too era. So it could be a really interesting moment for a movie to try to engage with that. And I don't know if that movie could, you know, I mean, it seems like critics didn't really want to let Easy A get away with being, you know, easy and safe and rom-com-y then. And I don't know, maybe we don't have so much room for teen rom-coms anymore in the world we live in. What do you think? Well, anyway, that's all I have for tonight. I want to say thank you to Fine Motor for the use of their song Highway Moon. You can learn more about the band at finemotormusic.com. We usually close with Stay Witchy and Keep Watching Movies, but in honor of Easy A, I'm going to say stay excellent, stay golden, and don't forget tomorrow's Earth Day.
Try, but you won't.